Hey, everybody, the 2024 Spoilie Awards went live as of March 10th.
That's right, and if you want to see our beautiful faces, you can see it on YouTube. Check out the link in the description of this episode.
Or you can go and listen to it right now on whatever you're listening on. And welcome to Spoilers Intended, a podcast about series and films. My name is Andrew. This week I am joined by Ryan.
Hi.
And Steven.
You say that like it's going to be different next week.
It could be different.
We never know. Steven, this is your notice.
Yeah, sorry, Steven. We have to have a talk.
Legally, we have to do it on air.
That's not how that works at all.
That's the only way we can document it. We don't have paper here.
No, that's how it was in his contract whenever he first signed it. Did you not sign a contract?
I didn't sign anything except for your bathroom wall.
Ryan, we need to have a talk.
No!
So this is an unscripted episode, and
can you tell?
we are discussing some of our favorite soundtracks, or just
movie and TV series,
specific tracks from. We're not going to listen to the whole. You know,
oh, man, I didn't even think about TV series.
What?
Yeah.
How did you not?
I was just doing movies.
Ryan, we need to have a talk.
I didn't actually pick any for this.
Okay, good. I don't feel as bad.
But I definitely thought about G-Witch.
Because, that outro.
So now, actually, you can go and listen to, we did a whole episode or bonus episode on Patreon, just a dollar. You can sign up right now. I don't care. But
we do care.
We do care. Yes. But we basically did a whole episode of where we did a game show to where Steven and Ryan attempted, very poorly, by the way.
Yeah,
we started strong.
You started strong, then you tapered.
It was definitely he was like, all right, that was the easy round. We were both like, that was easy? And then it got way worse from there.
Yeah, we did a whole game show of them guessing movie soundtracks and TV, movie soundtracks, basically, throughout almost like 80 years.
Totally not from musicals.
Yeah. That was one time.
I lied to you.
So I think music and soundtracks are some of the most important parts of modern media, period. There's a reason why silent films weren't actually silent. They had to have music.
I thought you were about to say why they sucked.
There's a reason why silent films went the way of the dodo.
Well, no, I mean, like, you have to have music to
help.
They
had a piano player playing accompaniment.
Yeah, you need to have music to explain the emotions and help carry that over to your audience whenever you're doing it. So I think music's honestly really important. I know that I'm definitely the one that listens to the most music in this room, but then also definitely musical soundtracks.
Man, that was pretty rude. That was a pretty rude assumption with Ryan sitting over there.
No, he's probably right.
Well, I work from home and I listen to music all day.
You listen to music all day.
That's true. That is true.
I listen to music in like pockets and windows of time.
So I kind of really wanted to just go do a quick round, not really quick, but a round table of just some of our favorite tracks. They don't have to be like the top five that you've ever done. Because I honestly think that is impossible to do.
Well, it depends on your mood.
Subjective. Yeah, there's a lot of these going through my list of like, well, what would I add to this? It's like, well, that's when I feel this way, this is what I want to hear.
Exactly.
So I tried to kind of do a shotgun approach.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a smattering in here.
It's a good cry song. It's a good upbeat song. It's good whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we're just going to go round robin, and we're going to play basically, I'll say 30 seconds to a minute long clips of these. Yeah,
we can only play so much or we're going to get in trouble with
people. Still going to get demonetized for this one anyways. It's fine.
Yeah.
Demonetized.
We're not going to be monetized.
We got to get monetized first, guys. Are y'all getting cash? We need to talk.
Ryan, you guys are getting to have it.
You guys are getting paid?
Why are you wearing such fancy clothes?
Do you see my microphone over here?
Why is mine in cardboard? I don't understand.
Why is the Patreon money all gone?
What I'm going to do is whenever I do my tracks, I'm going to set the scene and then you can
you can listen in.
And if we want to talk over it, that's fine. But you may just listen to 40 seconds of a track and then we're going to pick back and talk again. So it's fine. Either way.
Let's rip one.
Yeah, so here's the scene. You are traveling in an underground mountain cave thing.
Okay.
The Hobbit?
Being chased by a very scraggly being.
The Hobbit.
Minecart.
And this is the first time you've ever seen something so wonderful.
Wow. Tell me when you press play.
I'm good. I hit play. And this is my favorite movement of any Howard Shore piece.
Thank you. What is the scraggly thing that's chasing me?
Gollum. It's Gollum.
I told you it was the Hobbit.
It's Fellowship of the Ring.
So the Hobbit's chasing him out of the...
He technically was, kind of.
The layers.
But the build-up to this is just so cool whenever they go into the big Great Hall the first time.
This is Mines of Moria.
Yes.
This is not being chased by a scraggly thing.
Well, I mean, like, he's following them.
There is about to be a Balrog. That is not a scraggly thing.
it's a shadow thing.
Shadow and flame.
All right, I'm good.
Yeah, a little swell right there. Just
Well, so the thing I really like about this track specifically is it's kind of between three of like the really massive tracks of this soundtrack, which you have Ringo South, which is like essentially the main theme. Then you have Bridge of Khazad Dûm, which is like kind of like the big battle theme that happens after this when they're running from the Balrog and all the goblins and whatnot.
Yeah.
And this one always gets overlooked because it's such a very short piece.
It hits real quick.
Yeah, it hits real quick. But every time, whenever, you know, Gandalf is in the movies, kind of like, we can risk a little bit more light. It opens up
the big cavern.
Man, like every single time I always get like really emotional about it just because like this is the first time that pretty much everyone except for Gandalf has seen this.
Right.
Including the audience. You as the audience first time journeyer.
And it's such a moving moment for me every single time I listen to it. And
so what is it about the track that you like so much?
I really love the buildup of it because it kind of crescendos a little bit and then it kind of like goes back and then kind of builds up.
An ebbing wave that is building strength with the swell.
Yeah.
It starts to swell, then it fades off, and then it comes back stronger and swells again. Yeah. And then with that,
the male choir like comes in right towards the end. They're like,
and it has such a big moment.
Yeah,
right at the end with the kind of the horns coming in. It's just beautiful.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it does. It sets the stage for like that part of the movie. Like,
it does.
You're right that like that. I saw a YouTube channel that like they take basically famous scenes and they put different music in it.
Oh god!
Sometimes it's like
it probably works.
Sometimes they take bad movies and they put like good music in it. And you're like, wow, that would have made that scene so much better.
That's the thing is, I have a kind of a standing thing. Whenever I think bad movies have bad music, or movies that people don't look fondly on have poor music choices, and the movies that are lifted up by music turn into good ones. And like, if you have an amazing soundtrack, people are going to look on that finally because whenever they hear the music, they're going to go back to those moments, even if they weren't the most perfect cinematic moments that exist, or like the best directing or animation or whatever, you still have that emotional connection to that series or TV show or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So someone else go.
You want me to go? You want to go?
I'm going to dovetail with this nicely.
Okay. Go for it.
So we'll,
lay down your sweet and weary head.
Is this Mary?
No. I think I know what this is.
You've come to journey's end.
I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, you're wrong, right?
I'm thinking of something way different.
Man, I haven't heard this in a long time.
Dream of the ones who came before. They are calling from across the distant shore.
All right, so could y'all tell me what that is? I'm real disappointed, Andrew.
It's been a long time since I've heard that.
I have heard this, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
Okay, so that is Into the West.
Yeah.
By Annie Lennox. So that is the credit scene of Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Yeah.
That,
yeah. That's where, like, I knew it was Lord of the Rings, but it was definitely one of those where, like,
it's not in the film,
but it's
the cap of the entire trilogy. And I love it because it's such a, honestly, a melancholy song.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a lot of ways, like, you are like Frodo, where you have burned out everything you are, and now you're laying down your weary head. Like, this is the end cap at the time that we knew before The Hobbit was announced.
You know.
prequel anyways,
well,
doesn't count.
Yeah, well, yeah. No, but I mean, like, it's kind of the romance of that is mm-hmm. whenever you've hit the end of this trilogy of films that are honestly some of the best ever made, and, you know, you just kind of, like, I mean, it is a melancholy song, but it's bittersweet.
Well, it's, I mean, melancholy is bittersweet.
Yeah.
It's the final just breath that you finally let go at the end. Just, mm-hmm. whew, you're like, I can relax. It's over. I'm sad that it's over, but I'm glad it happened kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and also,
I love that song.
It's the only of the three that have any vocals in the credits music, correct?
Does
the first and second
may
one
be was the carryover into the credits for Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, okay.
Which that happens at the end of Breaking the Fellowship. But
yeah,
the second one, I don't think it had any vocals for that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was just like music on the second one. I could be wrong though.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember because, I mean, most of the music in Lord of the Rings is not, there are no lyrics. You have like what, mm-hmm. Gollum's song is the only one I can come up with off the top of my head.
Well, so you have May It Be, which was May that one. Then you had...
what's the one that...
yeah, where...
He sings to the dude eating the...
Denethor's eating the tomato.
Yeah. cherry tomatoes.
Man. every time he bites into it and like it just like it spurts out, you're just like...
It does make me crave tomatoes too, though. I really like tomatoes.
Can
and I'm
you
like,
imagine
oh, man.
Like that perfect tomato? You're so juicy.
Oh,
so
I like
ripe.
The Denethor every now and then.
All right, Ryan, what you got?
Okay, I'll play one. I wasn't prepared to set the scene like Andrew did, but I can.
I have one for I didn't, every single
I
one.
I didn't set the scene. I should have. I will
should
next
have.
Time. I'll
yeah,
do
next time.
I'll do better.
okay. Imagine that the fate of an entire planet and an entire civilization rest on your shoulders.
Interesting. Dragon Ball Z?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
This build up.
Just love those horns, man.
Oh, yeah.
Ma, ma, ma.
See Ryan's face right now. He's so happy.
The Planet Krypton by John Williams from Superman the movie.
Hey, I was right. It's just Western Goku.
It is, yes. So I remember as a kid, obviously the Superman, you know, the main mm-hmm. theme song would get me so pumped, right?
Yeah.
But I used to have, I was probably 3 going on 4, mm-hmm. and I had these Superman onesie pajamas that had this little Velcro cape that you could take on or off, right? It's got the footies, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The
booties. You all had those. Come on. Everybody had
and
those.
So
don't lie.
When we would watch Superman, I would put these on because I'm like, well, I got to, you know, be in costume. And I remember as a kid, not fully understanding music and stuff like that, but when they would start to go to the planet Krypton
mm-hmm.
and they would start with Marlon Brando and like the whole like backstory of Krypton, because that's where this hits in the movie.
Yeah.
Like that sound of the build just made me feel heroic. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is what it's like to be Superman.
You get a good,
you know,
a good fanfare of horns and you're just like, oh, I can go through that brick wall.
So it's kind of funny. I have like a whole like epic soundtrack playlist that has like thousands of songs in it.
Yeah.
And I kid you not, I hear the Superman soundtrack from the motion picture mm-hmm. a lot, but the one track that I hear all the time is The Destruction of Krypton.
Oh,
and
yeah.
every time I hear it, I'm like, Destruction of Krypton. And I'm like, I don't know why it just keeps popping up
Spotify
on the shuffle.
Spotify weights your playlist, and if you listen to something a couple of times, like, he likes this, it should come up more. And you listen to it more, and they're like, he likes this, you should play
you're
it
doing
more.
That smart shuffle. You got to be true random.
Spotify has had terrible true shuffle for a very long time. It's awful.
Miserable.
Yeah, it's just the worst.
Anyways, that's always one of my favorite tracks because
it's
like
fantastic.
Little John the Williams. Horns and the building and when the orchestra, and for me it's the dynamics. It starts off because I played it about 30 seconds in right there.
Yeah,
it starts off just barely anything. You have to listen. Like, is there anything
real
playing?
Real silent?
And it just goes all the way up to that full crescendo, and then it comes all the way back down for like six more minutes. It does like 6 minutes of just like real low key
which
stuff.
I kind of like that, those kind of tracks, because Last Samurai has a couple tracks like that that really build up, and then they chill out for like another like 2 or 3 minutes that is still really beautiful,
yeah.
But it's not like the main part of it, which most of the time they're always backloaded to where you have like the big emotional moments at the end.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me pull up my next one.
Yeah.
You're supposed to already be ready.
Gosh. Oh, I was doing that, but then I had to talk. So
amateurs, I tell you, surrounded by amateurs.
Surrounded.
So imagine.
Oh, mm-hmm. There's the scene.
Yeah. So imagine that you are a pilot of a very giant robot.
Okay.
And you are doing your best to save the one you love.
Yeah.
At the expense of humanity.
This is just a Tuesday for me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is very different from what we've already been listening to.
Okay.
The piano, Shinji.
But yeah, so this is a track from Evangelion 2.0. So essentially, mm-hmm. the second movie of the rebuild films that came out after he did the whole series.
He's got to get you a flowchart for this one.
Yeah,
for non-Evangelion fans, what that means is
so you can technically watch the first 1.1 and 2.0 basically without having to watch the series.
Because it's edgy and new.
Where's the decimal come from?
But so the thing I love about this track is, one, it's an absolute banger, but mm-hmm. two, it hits at the pretty much the emotional climax of the whole franchise, because yeah. this is kind of the turning point for Shinji, our main character, whenever he has decided that humanity doesn't matter anymore. He has to save Rei, which is mm-hmm. basically a girl that got absorbed into this other monster that he's trying to destroy.
Sure, as one
yeah.
is wanted.
Yeah, this is just how it works.
Just how anime works.
But the thing that's really cool about it is, one, the visuals are absolutely stunning while this is happening, mm-hmm. but the other main character is basically like cheering him on to do this, where at this point, like, she's just like, I don't care anymore. Just right. save the girl. And essentially what it does is it ends up destroying like another like third of humanity because of this. And this is definitely one of those moments in the film where, especially the franchise itself, where like you haven't really seen this kind of level of action yet
yeah.
from our main character or like really anything else. So this is one of those really big moments. And the fun fact is my wife and I got married to the song that came after this song in the movie.
I thought you were about to say this song. I was like, that's intense.
Come down the aisle.
You were there. But yeah, it's there's just something about this. And I like, whenever I was trying to pick these, I always came back to songs that I just always go back to whenever yeah. like in whenever it like pops up on a playlist, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to hit repeat on this one just so I can listen to it again.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, they're never long enough. This is only a 2-minute and 42-second track, and which is just the length of the scene.
Yeah.
Which happens a lot in anime.
It
unfortunately.
Doesn't matter though. That moment lives forever in your mind.
It really does.
And stretches with time.
Yeah.
To me, the thing too, that's interesting about it is it like, I have not seen the rebuild movies that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've seen them probably one time
yeah.
each.
I think you watched them with me.
I watched them with you once. When they first came out.
Yeah.
But I think I may have rewatched them before the last
fourth one came out.
Yeah. So I've seen them twice.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I heard that, I immediately recognized it as Evangelion. Mm-hmm. So like to me, it's similar enough to the music from the show.
Yeah.
That it obviously, you know what I mean? Like it has the same.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just disappointed that he pulled from Evangelion and he didn't go for the intro song.
Well, no, but that's, yeah. I don't have any.
Such a banger. Angel's Thesis.
I don't have yeah. any vocal tracks for my choices. But
yeah.
with, so Shiro Sagisu, the composer for this, he obviously did the original music
yeah.
for Evangelion. And what he did was he really took a lot of those and he remastered them and recomposed them into more modern mm-hmm. style tracks for the rebuild films.
Yeah.
So, like, if you like the older music from Evangelion and you haven't seen the rebuild films, definitely watch them. One, the animation quality is incredible, but the music is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Story, that's a different conversation. Yeah,
it's fine. Well, no, like, honestly, like, if you just watch like one and two, you don't really need to see the other one. Right. All right, Steven.
All right. I shall set the scene. So imagine that for centuries, your people have been taught that these other creatures are wrong. And then you find
I know where this is going.
That an outcast has been fraternizing with one of these creatures. And they are trying to convince you that what they're doing is good.
One of the best tracks.
Which Avatar song is this?
This is not Avatar.
Oh, what?
This whole soundtrack's just incredible.
I had a hard time choosing which one to pick from this.
Yeah.
So that is Romantic Flight from How to Train Your Dragon.
Which is not the one I thought you were going to pick.
What did you think I was going to
pick? I thought you were going to pick Test Flight.
So
he's much more romantic than that, Andrew, clearly.
So if if I showed you my little notebook where I was making the notes on this.
It's all How to Train Your Dragon track.
Just see, every one of them.
If you look there, you can see I wrote Test Drive and then I wrote Romantic Flight under it.
Yeah.
Because I went from Test Drive to Romantic
Which this flight. I actually really like this one too, because you have like a lot of like the playful strings in there. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's such a, because the concept here of Romantic Flight is, oh, it's Hiccup and Astrid and it's romantic. It's the romance.
It's of the flight. Romance of flight.
This is the first moment that she's ever touched the clouds.
Yeah.
And they do that big sweep up off the ocean when once she apologizes and Toothless stops being
Toothless
jerk. Oh, no, we need her to like us. What are you doing, you miserable reptile? but they break through the cloud cover as like sunset's happening. So when they hit the top of the clouds, it's dark.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's such a beautiful carrying tune.
It really is.
In the sky.
Especially because it is twofold. Obviously, you have the budding romance between Astrid and Hiccup, but then you really do have like the romance of flight of being able to touch the clouds for the first time and see the world a different way than what you've been able to see it
as. Well, it's such a turn for Astrid's character in general, not just from aspect, because like she becomes a dragon rider later.
Yeah.
It's like she also gets to experience this on her own.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We've talked about it on the show. I love this film entirely,
But the music is what carries it.
Because of the music.
Yeah.
Like I had to debate between like, this is Burke. I had to debate between it's either Wounded Dragon or Down Dragon, but it's the bit when he's approaching Toothless and Toothless opens his eyes and does that, like that super mystery going on.
Yeah.
And then Test Drive and this.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that was probably the hardest debate I had today, was like, I can't just put like the whole sound. My whole list could just be the soundtrack and they'd just be like, what is wrong with you? We need these people to like you.
That would have been pretty funny, actually. Every time we came back to Steven, it's just another track. Anyway, so it's track number three. Just goes in order.
Just the whole song.
That would be hilarious.
The actual soundtrack for that movie is so brilliantly done by John Powell, where like the first introduction to like This Is Burke has basically every key piece of leitmotif for every character in it, creating the town. And then as you go, you pull out each of those individual strings, and then like Test Drive finally puts Hiccup's and Toothless's leitmotifs together because they're actually working together to fly.
Mm-hmm. Man,
like it's such an incredible concept expressed in music.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
All right, Ryan.
Okay.
Set the scene, baby.
Imagine
you're
walking down a road next to an empty field, right?
Okay.
What's that in the distance?
The corn?
Corn?
It's an airplane. Is it coming towards me?
I think it's chasing me.
Is this North by Northwest?
Yeah. I was going to say, wow, I haven't heard this one in a long time.
I haven't heard this in forever.
Alfred Hitchcock had such a very specific feel for his
everything.
Like, well, because I'm sure that like he had them compose this after he did the scene. And he probably, like, I don't know.
Well, this is actually the opening of the movie. This
is it?
Yeah. I just, like, when you think of North by Northwest,
that's the only, sequence
the only
that
scene
you
really,
so.
Like, you know, yeah. stands out. No,
such
so
a frantic song.
Bernard Herrmann does this, and the reason I like it so much is because it perfectly encapsulates the movie and the chaos mm-hmm. and, like, everything
yeah,
that happens in it and the tension
ridiculous.
And suspense.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, I don't know. For me, it's since it's the opening, it's the perfect, like, palette setter for like mm-hmm. what's coming up
oh, yeah.
in the movie. You know
well,
what I mean?
Because especially back then and up until I think like mid-2000s or maybe late 90s when mm-hmm. The law was you had to have all the credits at the beginning. So you
oh,
had
yeah.
overture music.
I think it was early 90s is when that
somewhere,
went away.
Yeah, somewhere around yeah. there. But yeah, you had to have all the credits at the beginning just for the Screen Actors Guild and all that other kind of stuff to where you had this overture music that really set the pace for how the film was supposed to be perceived. And I think it really does a good job. Like those kind of pieces
yeah.
really do it. Justice.
Yeah. Well, again, it's, I mean, there's a bunch of other examples, but for me, that's the one, if someone was like, hey, what's an example of like an opening thing that really like just sets the stage for yep. what's coming and is almost like, if you listen to it, it like hints at what's going to happen. Like there's mm-hmm. going to be so many twists and turns and chaos.
Well, and same thing, like Psycho is another good example yeah. of that mm-hmm. with like Alfred oh. Hitchcock where like
Vertigo too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah.
Hitchcock, all of his music.
That's just,
his,
just, it's all about the twists and the turn.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be at some point you think he'd learn how to be ready.
One of these
look things. Like I'm having to talk here.
I'm already set for my next one.
I'm already set
I'm
for
I'm set
my
up
next
too.
One.
Oh yeah.
Well, do you want to just skip and Steven go?
No.
See, you can set the scene here. I can set the scene. So imagine that for centuries you've been taught that these creatures are wrong, and then you come upon. No, it's not. It's not How to Train Your Dragon.
All right,
Andrew plays the same track.
It'd be amazing if he comes in and he plays How to Train Your Dragon.
All right, so imagine you have just betrayed the one you love, okay. and the galaxy that you love,
oh.
along with everyone else this that you've ever loved.
Okay. Either incredibly anime or Star Wars.
Am I Lando Calrissian in this situation?
So this is my favorite track of the prequel films for Star Wars.
Man, so, that's a brave choice.
And Anakin has just obviously, he basically has turned to the dark side. He's just murdered all the separatists out on Mustafar, the lava planet.
Yeah.
And he's finally coming to terms with kind of who he is.
Yeah.
And man, Williams with the horns here.
Oh, yeah. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
What I tell you, it's either anime or Star Wars. There's no in between.
Listen, leave him alone.
That's rude.
But also,
that's very
you,
rude.
Bold choice book. My favorite song from the prequels, while Duel of Fates is sitting in the corner staring.
Listen,
at you like,
it's not, that's not his favorite.
No, well, no. I mean, like, no. I did say favorite.
You did say favorite.
No,
not necessarily the best.
I retract it, Your Honor.
Yeah, I'm not going to say this is the best track.
Overruled.
Out of like, I think actually Battle of Heroes or Anakin versus Obi-Wan is probably the best. I mean,
Duel of Fates.
No, Duel of Fates is really, really good.
John Williams basically said, "Oh, okay, George, you're making the prequels, and they're not going to be well executed. I'm going to set my piano on fire."
Well, yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing is
for the all three
movies have some of the best work that he's done.
Killer
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Like just incredibly good soundtracks. And this has such a good emotional attachment to basically Anakin as a character. Because you do get this leitmotif earlier throughout his, especially in Revenge of the Sith, but it just builds up to this, you know, obviously the big moment that everyone has been waiting for. That's a Star Wars fan, essentially, of
right, yeah.
Anakin turning into Darth Vader.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, too, like, hearing it, I can picture the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But before you said what it was, I knew it was Star Wars.
Yeah.
I felt like it was prequels because I was like, this doesn't sound like anything from the original trilogy.
No, it's definitely.
But I was trying to place what it was or when it hit or whatever. And then when you said it, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, his description like, sold it. Again, as soon as it hit in the horns, like, okay, so John Williams, Star Wars. Betrayed, so Anakin.
Yeah,
and it's all come together.
He's standing on the scaffolding with all the lava and stuff around him, and then he's got a little tear coming down of his eye.
Yeah. Unscripted, by the way.
Probably not.
They had to CGI that in three times. Anakin, stop moving.
We could put it in post, maybe. We could put a tear running down his cheek, make him seem emotional.
Oh, man.
Make him seem emotional after I've directed him to have no emotion ever for the last 3 years.
Who's next, me or Steven?
I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay, go for
so,
it.
I'm trying not to say imagine, but it's really hard not to when you're setting a scene.
Do it.
Imagine.
Do the hand thing.
Imagine.
There it is. Thank you.
Magic. That it's the late 1700s.
I don't know where this is going.
Ugh, worst time ever.
War ravaged times, and you are running to save your love.
Oh, yeah.
You knew this was going to be on here.
Oh, it had to be.
And this starts out a little slow.
It doesn't matter. It's fantastic. Got like one more bar.
Here we go.
Man.
I mean, we could just let that run for all 6 minutes if we really wanted to.
I mean, so yeah, Promontory by Trevor Bates.
It's Trevor Jones and,
Trevor Jones.
And Randy Edelman.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. From Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah, man.
Daniel
Day-Lewis just running down a trail.
In the mist. Yeah.
Is that towards the end of the movie?
So the funny thing
is. Is it like 3/4?
It basically happens three or four. The leitmotif happens a lot.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, the funny thing is that little bit shows up in like six songs in the soundtrack.
Yeah, gotcha.
But I'm fairly certain when Promontory plays is when he's running down the path that's on kind of the cliff face.
It's after the canoes, right?
Yes, it's after the canoes. So his love has been taken by the Iroquois.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's the Huron. I can't remember who the tribe is supposed to be. But either way, taken by a rival tribe, and she's being carried down those pathways along the cliff face to the final – where the final fight happens at the waterfall, which is just beautiful. Which, again, it's one of those moments that I always have now with modern cinema where I watch something like this, which it's not that old, but it's just – think about how expensive it was to fly these helicopters.
Oh, yeah.
I know, right?
Nowadays, it's just like any yokel with a drone can take these shots. And it costs like
$100
bucks.
Has – fixed a lot of budgets, but then they're just like, oh, we're gonna put VFX in it now and it's fine, and then they bloat the budget anyways.
But like the way
they just moved that byline somewhere else.
Yeah.
But like the way that this is shot, and you have like kind of that I guess it's really kind of late evening, like as the sun's setting, mist coming up in the Blue Ridge Mountains essentially, which is where this was shot. And as you know, Daniel Day-Lewis is just trucking it down this path, trying to catch up, and he's as he's killing the rear guard, he's picking up their muskets because you only get one shot, and using that to shoot the next guy to go get his gun. And it's just it's
just playing hopscotch.
Such an incredible scene.
So it's definitely not Last of the Mohicans, but The Patriot has another really good scene similar to that, where basically
they understood knew
where he's running through with hatchets, and he's just basically picking up one gun, shooting a guy, picking up another gun, shooting a guy, then killing another guy with a hatchet, picking up his gun to shoot another guy,
picking up his hatchet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's but yeah,
man, I need to watch that movie again. It's been a long time.
It's so good.
We should probably review it.
We probably should.
We should. I mean, it earns its R rating.
I mean, yeah. I've been,
that's how I like it, baby. How salacious can it be? All right. For this one, not a lot of setup needed.
No?
Imagine the city's full of crime. And you're the only cure.
Is this RoboCop?
Terminator?
RoboCop.
Batman. You heard that Danny Elfman just right in there.
Yeah.
This is the title track, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there it is. This is credit roll.
Oh. Yeah.
You get all the little leitmotifs in there. Yeah.
fantastic.
Man, he was having a good day.
Man, just like
I love this song. This is probably my favorite Danny Elfman song.
I mean, it's fantastic. It's
a fantastic
because
song.
There's a lot of reasons. Number one, it's just a banger. But
well,
I love
you can see
how many different places he goes.
Mm-hmm.
In like that was like 45 30, seconds. Yeah. You know.
Well, and the thing that I like about this too is you can listen to it and you can see like the shot going down the alleyway.
Yeah, oh, for
you're
sure.
On that flight roller coaster right there. Yeah. As is.
And you see the shadow.
Oh, yeah.
But then every motif and every section of that part right there is so different from the last, but it all feels like Batman.
Yeah, it does.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's got that feeling. Well, and like the other fun fact about this song is, or this soundtrack in general, is that Tim Burton wanted Danny Elfman to do the tracks or the soundtrack for Batman, and Warner Brothers like absolutely not, because the only thing Elfman had done before this was he was in the band Oingo Boingo, and then he did Pee Wee's Big Adventure with which Tim Burton directed. And that's got like, you know, a crazy madcap
score all over the place,
right?
Yeah,
and so that was the only point of reference they had, was like Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Absolutely not let this man touch back.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure is actually a great film.
It's a really good
film. It's got a really good score too, if you like really listen to what he's doing in it. But like Warner Brothers was like, absolutely not. And so, you know, Tim Burton goes back and forth and he's like, I'm not doing this without Danny Elfman doing the thing. And they're like, no. And so the only way he was able to convince him is he got Danny to like make this, the opening track, and he played it for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like,
walked into the executive suite. All right.
Yeah.
So Danny Elfman's out. I found a dude whose name you don't know, but let me play you a little piece of his so you can see what it's like. They're like, oh, we love this. You need to hire him.
Okay, it's
his
Elfie
name is
Danman.
Elfman.
Elfie Danman's here. But yeah, I love that backstory too, that like that Danny Elfman's just sitting on this banger of a song going, like, I could do this. This could be great. And then like they're like, nah, man, we got Prince coming on. He's going to do some tracks.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
You know. And so, yeah, I really like too, because like they pull a lot of the it's mostly the same theme for the animated series. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a couple of tweaks, but it's like, it's just so, to me, that's Batman.
This is,
yeah.
Well, know. I like how you picked some really iconic DC pieces here. Because like Superman and Batman have probably two of the best known.
Well, it's because of Danny Elfman and John
Williams.
It is. I mean, they had some of the best composers, you know, wheelhouse doing these things. But of course, at the time, Danny Elfman probably wasn't known, obviously.
Yeah. But then he made his name from this.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, man.
But to your point, like superhero, or at least movies back then, you had a theme song attached to that hero that was like, it was an earworm. You could, you know, hear it in your head. Now, you know, Loki's theme? Anybody have, you know?
Pretty much the only thing that we know is essentially the Avengers.
It's Alan Silvestri.
Alan Silvestri. Go figure. He's a great composer.
Yeah.
Come on, now you got Spider-Man's theme.
Well, Spider-Man.
Actually, Danny Elfman did the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man theme, and it's pretty good,
it's good
too.
Yeah.
And like when they played it in the newest one, No Way Home.
Yeah, yeah.
When they play it, when Toby hits the screen, I was like, oh, Danny Elfman.
It's the only good music in there.
Well, it stands out because you're like, ah, there's that song. But I don't know. I feel like.
Danny Elfman was a good pull here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I had a bunch of others on my list here or whatever, but like it felt like to me, like that was the most. Because it represented such a wide range of sounds in a short period of time. And it again reminded me of like old superhero movies where like it just sounds iconic to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to set the scene here.
Oh boy.
Okay.
You have just witnessed your master or your teacher pass away.
Okay.
You are now speaking to the president of a country.
It's like algebra teacher. Or what
You are doing your best to explain to him how he lived.
Oh, this is Last Samurai.
So anyway, he's a pretty cool guy.
Wow, Ryan.
So this is the last track of the soundtrack, and There's something, I mean, A Small Measure of Peace is the name of the track.
For The Last Samurai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
oh, I knew what it was.
I don't know, but the listener at home might be like, the last track of what?
I already told him.
So good. But I love just how it builds to an emotional moment, but it doesn't, like, like speed its way to get there.
Yeah,
it's not rushed at all.
Yeah,
this is very much so a whole life
and
played out over
this
time.
This is so different than what, you know, Hans Zimmer's other stuff he's done. Like he did, you know, Gladiator.
Every time this comes up, I'm like, oh yeah, Hans Zimmer did it. We said in the review of this film, we're like, oh yeah, this is Hans Zimmer, because it just doesn't feel.
It doesn't feel like him.
Like what I expect when I see Hans Zimmer.
He's actually pretty versatile, though.
He is.
When you look at a lot of his...
Well, and I think the reason why people think of Hans Zimmer not doing something like this is because of Batman and The Dark Knight and Inception.
Inception.
And he had a couple of those films that all had the blah kind of stuff in it.
So Inception and Inception and Inception.
Well, I mean, and Dark Knight definitely has that in there,
too.
Has
a few of them.
Yeah, Dark Knight Rises, that kind of stuff. But it's one of those where, like, or he's one of those composers where I think he got typecast into that style, where a lot of his earlier stuff is much more like emotional. And I'm not saying his newer stuff is bad by any means. Like,
sure.
He has some incredible soundtracks, but something about the Last Samurai soundtrack for me just really hits. Not because I just love the movie, but it's just such an emotional track.
Yeah.
Like just like all of them, but this one, that one particular, A Small Measure of Peace, is definitely one that I always go back to whenever I want to listen to just something from that soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good track.
All right, so we're going to get weird with this one.
Okay.
So this is, to set the scene, this is the West is shrinking, right? The big folklore names are starting to disappear and fade, and you're finding out that some of your idols aren't who you thought they were, right?
Five Goes West.
Definitely.
I don't know what this one
is. Yeah,
I'm
drawing a blank.
If either of you have seen this movie, I'll be shocked.
It's great music, though.
It's fantastic.
Five Will Goes East?
I love that violin.
Oh, it's so good. It's cheating. It's just like a violin, a cello, and a piano.
Yeah.
It's just the cheat sequence for how do you make emotional
cheat
music.
Cheat sequence.
So that
is...
the
Konami code for musical scores.
So that
cello,
is the,
violin, piano.
The brilliantly named Song for Bob from the movie The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
I have seen this. It's been probably when it came out.
Probably when it came out. So this is by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. So this is...
Nick Cave from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
Yeah, so this is just a fantastic. Like, I listen to this all the time when I just want to like just let it mellow and let it roll.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Because this is the piece of Song for Bob is Robert Ford. So he like throughout the movie, because it's a Western, but it's not what you would think of as a Western.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very much so he wants to join Jesse James's gang while they're doing like bank robberies and train heists and stuff. And his brother is in the gang, and he idolizes his brother. He idolizes Jesse James because he's, you know, the Wild West folklorish type hero, rob for the rich kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, he finally starts to get accepted into this, and he's learning that Jesse James is not who he thought he was, and like it's the crushing of his idol.
Yeah.
So he ultimately ends up, you know, killing him, shooting him literally in the back, like actual real life, like shoots him in the back kind of thing for a bounty because there's not really money to be made in what they're doing. It's just kind of this flailing struggle.
Yeah.
And then, like, so the movie, it feels like that's where the movie would end, but it keeps going into, like, how Charlie and Robert Ford's lives just kind of fall apart after this.
Right.
Because they're the people associated with killing the folklore hero. So, like, people, once they've heard the story, they don't like them anymore. And, like, they're just kind of, like, they don't get what they thought they were going to get out of it. So it's this incredibly melancholy, just trailing song. It's, I mean, again, this is another long, you know, 6 minutes.
Yeah,
song,
right.
But
yeah,
it just keeps going. Goes and goes and builds and builds. Oh,
yeah.
Nice. All right. Do we want to talk about.
You got anything left? No? Nothing else?
I can, yeah.
I mean, well, fair and fair alike. We'll let you get one last shot in here. You weren't ready for this.
I was not.
That's why I did it to him. That's why I did it to him.
Ha ha.
Gotta keep you on your toes.
He's the one that's trying to wrap up.
Here's the setup.
I could talk about soundtracks all night.
I could do another. I mean,
here's the setup. You're a muscle boy and you got not a lot of brains.
One Punch Man?
Yeah. All three of us are running in place. You can't see it at home. True classic.
Oh, yeah.
I love that synth. Oh, yeah. Rise in there.
See, aren't we glad we did one more so we go out on Rocky?
Sure, it's a classic.
Oh,
so
man.
Bill Conti obviously did the music on that one. And I love it because, like, it's very 70s, but it also almost is timeless.
It basically is timeless. There's almost no way that you can't get hyped from that.
I know. If you're not hyped right now, go to the doctor immediately.
Because it really does a fantastic job of just, I mean, it's the first montage, like really popular montage that you get out of the film.
Yeah, and it's probably, you know, I can't, like, speak for every movie ever, but it's probably one of the first, like, movies to really lean into the montage and the song at the same. It's like a little mini music video in the middle of the movie.
It's like the prototype sports movie that sports movies became.
Yeah.
From that, like, from the moment that movie was released, every other person who was like, I have a sports movie idea. We're going to do the Rocky thing. We're going to have, like, a really cool banger song and we do training.
What's your montage?
Yeah.
Where does it hit in the film? It's got to be before the front half, right? It's the back half. You know, yeah.
Second act or bust, baby.
Yeah, it's such a cool song too, because it's like, it does, you know, hit those themes of, like, it's inspiring, it's the underdog, you know, and it just makes you want to go run outside in the cold.
Just see him, it seems hitting that frozen meat.
I was just about to say, go get in the freezer, punch the slab
sides of meat.
Yeah. Break the ribs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Rocky, and I love the soundtrack.
I mean, the first movie is phenomenal.
Oh, the music makes a lot, in a lot of ways, makes the Rocky franchise, stuff like Eye of the Tiger.
Because they do that theme, like, on piano, slow at one point. Yeah. They come back to it so many times, but, like, when it hits that big, the big fanfare, it's just
then he's up on the steps with his arms up.
It's great. So, you know, not to be basic, but it's just a classic track.
There's nothing wrong with that track at all.
I love it so much.
All right, well, because Ryan says that we have to finish the episode.
He'll join
I'll
you.
Be the bad
he
guy.
He wants us to save stuff maybe for another film.
Hey, maybe we'll have another episode.
Yeah, maybe we'll have another episode.
And that one, we won't invite Andrew. We'll just talk about soundtracks.
Ryan, we have to talk.
Steven. So here's track 6 on how to train your track. No, this is a mistake.
But before we go, we have to talk about our Patreon, because that is what we do.
Yeah.
For $1 a month, you can get access to all of our bonus content, bonus episodes, commentaries,
Patreon picks poll. You can help determine what we're going to review. And in fact, when this episode
we have one
releases,
happening right
it's
now.
Right now, it's up there. If you are in at the $1 tier or higher, not only does your money go to help support the show, pay our hosting fees, keep the lights on, it also can help dictate what we review.
Yeah, so right now we are doing, it is comedic heist films.
Yes.
And so we have The Pink Panther Strikes Again, Ocean's 11, Snatch, The Fantastic Mr. Fox, and Tower Heist.
Yep.
All up for grabs, excuse me.
Grab them now while they're hot. Yeah, so for you vote, we do the episode, and patrons get early access to it before it hits the main feed. So yeah, you can literally change the course of our show and determine
change
what we review.
Change the course of history.
Patrons get early access to hear that episode before it hits the main feed. But I tell you what I want to see is I want to see people voting and making it a tie across the board, because I want to review them all.
That would be wild.
That would be crazy.
Oh, man.
Also, you know, we have a Discord. We have a lot of fun over there.
Yep.
Feel free to join us
Come
over
join,
there.
Hang out.
Yeah. We have Facebook and Instagram if you want to check us out on social.
That'd
and
be great.
If you like what you've heard and you want to listen to more episodes, you can go to spoilersintendedpodcast.com. We got all our previous episodes and links to all that stuff's there.
Yep. I was going to do the whole, as always, follow us on social, leave us a review whenever you're listening now, and share us with a friend, but you already did that.
I did.
So I just did it again.
You just did it again.
Yeah, so that does sound like all the time we have. Yeah. And until next time, I'm Andrew.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Steven.
And every spoiler was intended.